Ready when you are, Esther.
Well, there you are.
There he is. He took off his sash, but...
His tiara.
Good morning. It is November 19th, 2010, roughly 10 a.m. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting. It is 9 a.m. Thank you. It is 9 a.m., I stand corrected, on November 19th, 2010. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting in a special meeting in the Public Service Commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the Capitol. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk, all present. The purpose of this special meeting is to take care of one agenda item, I believe, unless something's been added since the last time I looked at it. It is an item in my portfolio. I move the Commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, and the application of Bearpaw Energy, LLC, for a certificate of site compatibility, issuing certificate of site compatibility for energy conversion facility number 19 for the construction and operation of the Garden Creek plant in McKenzie County, North Dakota, case number PU10568.
Second.
The Bearpaw, of course, is a fully owned subsidiary of One Oak Partners, out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and is a well-known corporate citizen, I guess, in western North Dakota, especially in the gas production and processing side now. And this particular plant is a 100 million cubic feet per day gas processing plant near Watford City. We had the hearing, I'm just looking here for our dates. We had a hearing on this in Watford City. It was a very nice, uneventful hearing. A couple of folks showed up in support of the project, including the local legislator, Skip Drubdahl, and now Speaker of the House, and the emergency management director for the county, who had a couple of questions that were answered, I think, to his satisfaction, and appropriately had some thoughts that he wanted to share with the commission. We had the hearing on October 21st. And we, since then, have, received the order. The staff has worked on the order, our legal staff, along with Pat Fawn. We had it scheduled for a possible vote at our special meeting last week, but quite honestly, with all that was going on, and the special meeting was in the middle of the hearing on the MDU rate case, the commissioners hadn't had adequate time to review the order and then nor ask any questions of staff if they had any. Since then, we've had that opportunity. We know that winter is coming and that there's some urgency to the beginning of construction out there, and we want to help facilitate getting that construction started because, first of all, the order is solid, the evidence was good, the application was thorough, and probably more important than that, gas continues to be flared out of the Bakken, and as production continues, of course, more gas gets flared, and we want to see that gas being captured and utilized for the good, both the economic good of Western North Dakota as well as for society's good. As we know, natural gas has become, well, it has been for some time, a little bit taken a back seat to the crude oil production and development of the Bakken, and at the same time, we have both a legal obligation, when I say we, the companies have both a legal obligation not to flare it indefinitely, as well as we've often said here, a moral obligation to utilize that precious resource in ways that are beneficial to our society as well as to the economy. So everything seems to be in order. This is going to be about $175 million, $200 million investment in McKenzie County, no small matter. A couple of interesting things that came out of the hearing, as I recall, I was always stunned by large numbers, and I think they had testified that there are some 4,000 miles of gathering lines now that Bearpaw owns in western North Dakota, and they're planning on hooking up another several hundred wells. They already own a gas plant that's near the Montana-North Dakota line. It's not quite 100 million cubic feet, but now they're also planning yet another plant after the construction of perhaps of this plant. So a lot going on in western North Dakota, not only to explore and recover Bakken crude oil and get it to market, but also the associated gas.
All in favor?
Aye.
There's nothing else in on the agenda that I can see. Any comments from any of our members, including, of course, the newly elected president of the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners, Commissioner Clark. Congratulations, Tony. It's really cool, and it's really quite important. And so we're glad you're there.
Thank you. There's donuts in my office.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't sent out the email yet, so any staff who are listening, go.
Yeah, we'll be lucky.
We want first dibs on them there.
The chocolate-covered ones will be gone by the time I get there. That's cool. Okay, are there any questions?
I'm watching Scott to see how quick it takes for him. Looks like he wants to bolt
yeah,
out of this.
Yes.
You mentioned another plant. Could you talk about that?
Well, I don't know very much about it, except that we do know that they had testified to the fact that there are enormous natural gas, of course, reserves along with the oil reserves that One Oak, the parent company of Bearpaw, intends to make a lot of investment in North Dakota, as they have already to this point. Much of what they have at this point was developed, I guess, some by them, but also some acquisitions over the years. But they are now preparing to continue to invest heavily as corporate citizens of North Dakota, and why not? I was just down in Denver last week at the Bakken Infrastructure Development Conference, and a number of folks were there from the gas companies, including One Oak, and are very bullish on the opportunities.
So are we talking about the development, when you talk about more wells, are we talking about oil wells or with gas or just pure gas wells?
I think mainly oil wells with gas, but perhaps several gas wells as well. But the Bakken, as we know, the Bakken is conducive, obviously, to oil production. Without the fracking, you don't have the oil and you wouldn't have the gas, and without the oil, you wouldn't be doing the fracking. So clearly the gas is a byproduct. It is an interesting price risk situation, however, and that's why I think that the public policy side of this is very interesting. When you start talking about $80 to $85 a barrel oil and $3, an MCF gas, the oil is worth going after and the gas becomes a bit of a nuisance. And so the economics have to work. Obviously, public policy has to be conducive to exploration and recovery of that natural gas. And, of course, there's some institutional discipline built in by the fact that you cannot flare gas forever. Now, one of the criteria for a waiver of flaring is economic hardship. But nonetheless, I think North Dakota has done it pretty well. I watched the flare charts fairly carefully that the Department of Mineral Resources puts out. It's pretty interesting to see. We've caught up every now and then. We get to within single digits in terms of a percentage of the gas that's out there that's being flared. And then, of course, there'll be another big production spike on the oil side, and it takes a little while for the infrastructure to catch up to capture some of that gas so it's not flared. So while it's sometimes frustrating to see the flares out there, at the same time, I think that we are seeing significant investment in both the capturing and the processing of that gas. And in some cases, as we know, there's a lot of the wet gas even has a market outside of North Dakota. And so with the alliances between EOG and Alliance Pipeline, I didn't mean to use the term alliance twice, but the relationship between EOG and Alliance Pipeline and that huge capacity of the Alliance line to take wet gas down to the Chicago markets is also a major contributor to all of this. Also, by the way, the natural gas liquids are finding their way to markets out of North Dakota through rail facilities, which is even another part of this whole phenomenon of exporting out of North Dakota.
Do you have any idea what this will do to the price of gas that consumers pay when they heat their homes?
I guess, Dale, what I would have to think, all I could do is apply the basics of supply and demand economics. And, of course, more supply means that should mean better price for consumers, which, of course, means a worse price for the producer. I wouldn't have any direct knowledge of the correlation.
Right. In some incremental way it helps. Now, what that means to the pool of total available gas is... it would be tough to to extrapolate too much from that. The price of gas probably nationwide is mostly driven by the extraordinary shale gas plays that are happening in the southern plains, and things that are going on with that are going to have a lot more impact than this one particular gas plant.
Dale, if I could, what the federal government decides on energy policy and the role of natural gas, I think might be as big a deciding factor of this as it all goes forward. If the federal government decides to, you know, put the same kind of programs behind natural gas that it has behind wind, you could see a lot of the economics change. But I look forward to a good energy policy debate and figuring out what is the role of natural gas in our transportation, in our heating. I think that'll become a big factor.
Do you know how much gas is being flared presently?
I don't, off the top of my head. And it's funny you ask, because I looked at some charts last week, and I know it more from a percentage standpoint. I think it's around 12% right now, but I don't know what that extrapolates into in terms of MCF.
Is that, what do you think about a 12% flaring rate?
Better than 25 or which 40
it's
or...
yeah, which it's...
I mean, ideally, you'd like to be able to utilize all the gas that's produced. There's always a bit of a lag time between when you have this booming oil sector, which is, as you know, in North Dakota, it tends to be an oil-first play, and the gas is a byproduct of that. But so it's taken a while for the gas infrastructure to catch up with the production of oil. But to have it brought down as much as it's been has been a promising sign, but there's still a little ways to go.
Do you have any idea what the natural gas processing capacity of North Dakota has gone? I'm sure it's gone from X to Y in the last 2 years.
I don't know in terms of the last 2 years. I remember when I first started watching it, it was around 50 million cubic feet per day, and right now it's at about 350 million cubic feet per day. And climbing, it's interesting because the million cubic feet per day and the 100,000 barrel per day numbers tend to be very similar, and I don't know if that's just coincidence, but they haven't veered much, and that's 350,000 barrels per day, 350 million cubic feet per day of gas.
Is that including Tioga, or is that?
I think it's what's actually going on currently. I think it's not assuming Tioga or this one, frankly. You know, there are a number of smaller facilities around the western part of the state that are processing, but there's also that pipeline capacity. They're currently sending wet gas via the Alliance Pipeline down to the Chicago market.
Just so that I'm clear, this, the 300, for one, what is, do you remember the year baseline when you talked about 50 million?
I don't remember exactly, Dale, but I would say from 5 years ago. Yeah, 5-6 years ago.
And the 300 million doesn't include the expansion of the Hess plant nor this plant?
No, I think that's what they're capturing today, prior to either one of those things being. No, the Hess plant is doing about 110 million cubic feet per day now, and that's the expansion is to 250.
Just so I'm clear, Bear Paw is going to break ground yet this year?
I'll bet they might break ground this afternoon, Bill. Huh? They have to have a pre-construction conference with our staff, and then I think they're pretty well ready to go. They want to get concrete poured yet this fall. Full freeze up would be around 11. The usual issues of housing and stuff, of course, came up. They get the peak of the construction, Tony, as I recall. I think you asked that question. I think they were looking at about 200 people. But with all of their expansions and all of their pipelines and stuff that they have in the plan, they're looking at about 1,000 people, I think, on the ground in North Dakota.
Yeah, we did ask a number of questions regarding housing plans for the workers that are going to be brought in, because that's obviously a societal concern that we have, and that's one of the things the commission can take under consideration in the siting process. And so there have been a number of ongoing discussions and commitments to provide that housing for those workers while they're constructing the plant, which is important so it doesn't add to an already difficult situation.
When is this to be finished?
I've got it right here. It is to be completed in November of 2011 and in service 30 to 45 days after that. Now, you know, that's obviously, I think, a perfect schedule world, but, you know, roughly a year from now it'll be operating. or I mean, 2 years from now, it'll be operating.
I'm sorry. Could you just repeat?
No, I'm sorry. A year from now. November of 2011 is when it should be completed. Then there's a series of tests that they go through to make sure everything operates and functions properly, and it should be in service 30 to 45 days after that. So roughly around the beginning of 2012.
You said 2011. I thought it was 2011.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I mean, I was thinking it was 2009, so that's how screwed up I am. In fact, I just read something that had it off of your... an email. Anyway, so...
Could I inquire about the MDU case?
Sure.
How much are you looking at the airplane issue? Are you running off?
Don't go far, Bill.
Dale, the airplane issue was one of those that... Now, the commission hasn't accepted the settlement yet, but the airplane issue is one of many issues that were settled by staff and the company in such a way that neither staff nor the company would kind of acknowledge which ones they were throwing the towel in on and which ones they thought they had won. I mean, it's what we sometimes call, at least that portion of it, is what we sometimes call a black box settlement, which is that... all of the issues in that box were just settled with a final amount, and there's no kind of acknowledgement of which were more valid than others. So with regard to testimony, there was not a lot of testimony on that at the hearing itself because the advocacy staff and the company had settled that, and the other interveners did not raise it as an issue in particular.
I think the only witness that even talked about it was Dave Gooden, the CEO. And I think
they may have asked a couple questions.
I think there were a couple questions actually from interveners, which is where it came up.
I think he testified that most of his travel is commercial, himself buying tickets.
Do you have any idea when this might be done?
I think the plan was our next regularly scheduled commission meeting. I was going to request a work session between the three of us, and then... You know, obviously, we can't talk about it till then. So as soon as we can get a work session scheduled, we'll sit down and see where the three of us are at.
One of the main drivers that'll cause there to be some delay is it was a very lengthy hearing, and you have a court reporter there, and it takes several weeks when there's a hearing that long to compile the written record. And, of course, the attorneys in the case always prefer to have that before they start writing their briefs and proposed orders and things. So there'll be some delay just with regard to getting the manuscript typed up.
Yeah, the way the schedule I think that they agreed to works out is that once the transcript is available, then the attorneys have 3 weeks to file their briefs, and then there'll be another week for filing response briefs. So you're talking about a month before you'd even have that part of the record closed, a month after the transcript. So although that fancy new... machine that the recorder was using, I was thinking, seems if she had one more button neck thing, they could be printing it out right next to us. So I don't know how all that works. Of course, there's a lot of the stuff that has to be done with the transcript. But at any rate, so that the timeline, just by its logistical perfection, will require probably a month and a half to 2 months before we can even start deliberation.
Well, in your comment, we're in day 5 of the 2-year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. I lost a lot of time there that I hadn't scheduled it. We all did. But it was important.
I had something else I was going to ask about, but I can't remember what it is.
All right.
One of the things that's going.
My friend John von Ruden used to always say it's the second thing. Did he? Yeah. Yes. They had a lot of similarities that way. There's nothing further. We'll close the meeting.